Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
Sometimes listeners want to know about triggers.
I'm dealing with the aftermath of my husband's affairs, and he still works the same job that he did when he was acting out. It's a job that allows him to hide his goings-on and one that he stated was a previous trigger for his acting out. The whole 16 and a half years we've been together, he's acted out. In the beginning, what I thought it was just pornography. It ended up being, I found out 2.5 years ago, he had been with multiple prostitutes. I only found out a very small portion of that until about a month ago. How do you cope with all of that when you still have to deal with unavoidable triggers?
Well, of course you would feel traumatized by hearing all that information. And I gotta tell you, Stephanie, that's a staggered disclosure. That's finding out little bits and pieces about your husband's behavior throughout a time period, making you feel insecure, unsure, and unsafe. So what we gotta do is set up a situation whereby you get with a specialist to do a formal disclosure so you can hear everything at one time in a safe environment.
Here, sponsored by AppSats, the Partner Sensitive Trauma organization that trains clinicians and coaches and advocates for you. And it is such an honor to be part of that organization. And one of the things that we are developing is certifications on how to do proper disclosures. People just don't know. And what they don't know will oftentimes hurt the addict and the partner. And so we've made it our mission to educate the public. Dan Drake and Janice Caudill have written a book on disclosures, how to do them properly, written for partners and sex addicts so that they can know what to expect and they can request if they need to, that things be done a different way. I know that talked to a couple of couples, and they live in other states. Actually, one lives in a different country, but they basically were told how a disclosure was going to go down, and they said, we don't want that kind of a disclosure. We want a disclosure where the following happens. And you know, what we believe to be true, what Janice and Dan write about, is that the sex addict, after 90 days of good recovery, you know, this may be right after discovery, and now he or she is, they're going to 12-step groups. Maybe he is talking to his sponsor weekly. He's not having any slips or relapses. After there's that 90-day period, and sometimes it takes a while, sometimes 90 days can occur in a 180-day period. But once he has about 90 days of recovery, his head has cleared out and he can begin to work on a disclosure. And sometimes that takes 2 sessions with a therapist. Sometimes it takes 6 sessions with a therapist. However long it takes for him to write out the facts. And the facts are his timeline of what happened. And while he is figuring that out simultaneously, the partner has the opportunity, if she so desires, to write out all the questions she has so that she hears the truth in totality. See, what we're trying to do is stop, as the promo talked about, those staggered disclosures. They're harmful for partners. One woman described it as having 1,000 paper cuts killed her. She said, yeah, in and of itself, to find out that he looked at porn on my birthday may not have been any worse than going to that prostitute. But when I'm hearing those things, you know, over a period of weeks, months, years, depending on how long the discovery was, it's killer. And so we really want the disclosure to occur as soon as possible. That's why recovery for the addict has to be absolutely stressed. So after she has the opportunity to write some questions down, the couple is not supposed to talk about sex addiction activities at all. Now, that is the hardest thing for partners to do. I mean, I'll have a partner say to her husband, I don't care what Carol said. I want to know, did you blah, 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 blah. And so I'm really spending a lot of time educating partners and their addicts together and saying, listen, it's really, really important that you wait the 6 weeks it's going to take. And I know that sounds forever, but truly, this is in your best interest, because the disclosure, although it benefits the sex addict, the truth of the matter is the disclosure is for the partner. Now, if she doesn't want a disclosure, even though we recommend it, that's her choice. She gets to decide. And if the addict says, well, I want to get it all out, I want to tell you. Sorry about your luck. Tell me. Tell your sponsor. Tell your fellowship. If she doesn't want it, she doesn't have to, because she may be protecting her brain. She may have had too much information. Then they come into my office with support people. If I'm the addict's therapist, she brings her therapist in. If I'm the therapist for the partner, he brings his addict in. He brings his counselor in. If they don't have separate counselors, there are times that I see them together. There are times that they both work with me. For that day, it is obvious and apparent that I am her therapist, making sure she's safe. And he's got to accept and understand that. And, you know, we've had people bring in somebody from the fellowship. We've had partners bring in somebody from her support group, a coach. You know, coaches are great at supporting. So then they come in, and he reads her the facts, and she asks additional information. I just did one this Sunday, and she had to get up and leave 4 times. I had said to her, and as I do to all partners, if you're hearing some information and you just need to take a walk for a minute, you need to physicalize the stress of hearing this stuff, you just request a timeout and we'll take a walk. And I'm in a big office complex, so they typically don't want to go outside, but they will walk around the building with me. And I make sure she's okay. I call it our huddle. And then she comes back and gets more information. And then at the end of that, here in Indianapolis, she is allowed 5 polygraph examination questions. She can ask anything she wants that's polygraphable. And today we're going to be talking about polygraph examinations and what are they like. And I've got Dr. Crystal Hollenbeck, and she's going to be discussing the use of the lie detector exam in the sex addiction recovery process, because it's not just after disclosure. It can occur 4 times a year, twice a year, once a year, for as many years as really the partner needs to feel safe. And this sounds horrible, but I got addicts that say, it keeps me safe. It keeps her less triggered. I feel better. I'm working my program. It's not going to uncover anything that would be detrimental. It's going to make everybody know what the truth is. And so I'm real excited that Dr. Crystal's going to be on talking about that, because what we know is that every traumatized partner is asking the question to herself or him, depending on who the partner is, will I ever be able to trust my addict spouse again? That's the big question. Boy, that is a safety and stabilization question. That's, we want to get them into safety, and the polygraph can be very, very helpful for that. Then we want to, after they've got the truth, we want to help her to grieve. We want, you know, to help him continue his recovery. We want to help her to grieve, and we, that can take a year or two to go through that grief. And then, of course, we want to help her into post-traumatic growth. And as I said last week, my post-traumatic growth course is up and running. If you think you might be moving into post-traumatic growth, or if you think you're in solid post-traumatic growth, you can take my online course and determine where you're at, what principles you need to enhance and strengthen it. And you can be inspired by the many partners I interviewed throughout the process of this course. It does cost money. It's on www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach. It is an amazing course with a lot of hope, strength, and recovery. And I think it keeps partners looking forward as to what they can hope for when they're in that grief cycle. And they've got one foot in the grief cycle and maybe a toe or two in post-traumatic growth. We don't want them to skip the grief cycle. We want them to grieve as long as they need to grieve. But then we want them to start restoring their sense of self. You know, this whole thing has shook you up. And now it is time for you to remind yourself that you have the right to happiness. You have the right to stop thinking about this. You have the right to develop your own life, and that's post-traumatic growth. And the techniques, of course, that we use to make that happen. So that's my take on that. And I hope you're having a good week. You know, a lot of you were off for Martin Luther King Day. Sometimes being off gives you some rest and reflection. Sometimes not being off makes you resentful. Sometimes being off gives you too much time on your hands. A lot of you say to me, wow, I really need to be busy because being busy means I don't have to think about this 24/7. So I'm just real, real grateful that you know what you need, because that's what I ask him to do. You know, in my book, Help Her Heal, I'm always saying, what does she need? And he'll say, you know, I'm not really sure. And then I say, well, ask her. And then the partner will say, well, I know I need you to go to recovery. And I know I need you to check in with me. And like today, I was talking to a sex addict who said that his wife said, I need you to connect with me and talk about other things besides your recovery. I want to know what's going on with you. What are your feelings? And he said, that's kind of the problem, because right now I am so recovery consumed that I don't think much about anything else but our relationship and my recovery. And that does make it hard, you know, absolutely. But that might be talking about your work. That might be talking about the movie you just saw. That might be talking about the church sermon and how did it connect to your feelings. And so what does she need? She needs connection. But you know what? Sometimes before she needs connection, I had another addict in here today, and he said, you know, I don't feel like I can talk to my wife because she doesn't like me. And he says, she sends me all sorts of messages to leave me alone. And I said, well, you know what? I'll call him Tom. Tom, you need to do it anyway. She may be sending you those messages, but you need to figure out, you need to say, I want to connect with you. And I get that there might be specialized times you want to connect, but we got to figure out a time that we can do a little bit of that. Because that's my relational work that Carol's telling me I got to work on. I always say to the addicts, blame it on me, because I know it's healthy for the both of you, but I also know she may have her own, very own separate needs. And we got to respect those, first and foremost, but get a few healthy skills in too. And he's got to be able to practice because he doesn't know how to do a lot of this stuff anyway. And now he has further complicated things by traumatizing you beyond belief. So I don't know where you are in your own personal journey, but I do know that today's show is going to be informative. And, you know, if you're further along, isn't it nice that you can kind of share your wisdom with other women that are just starting this journey? And that's post-traumatic growth too, when you can give back because you've received the gifts of a lot of recovery, and now it's time for you to help other women, especially in, you know, your support group or in your church group, in your women's group, in your coaches group. There's so many ways that you can help other women. So I want you to be thinking about that. What can I do that contributes to not just my own sense of self, but also to the community at large? This is, you're a pioneer in this field. There has never been this much sex addiction because, of course, the internet made it accessible, affordable, and anonymous. And the very thing that created this demon can also be something you can use to get help and to give help. So I am so thrilled to have Dr. Crystal Holland back on, and she's going to be talking about how this exam, this lie detector exam, or the polygraph, can provide benefit for both the addict and the partner, which in part then creates a healthier coupleship. So, Crystal, welcome to the show.
Hi, Carol. So great to talk with you today.
Yes, and I thought this was a really good topic because so many partners and addicts both don't understand what a polygraph is, doesn't really understand how it can affect them, and both are mistrustful of it. So I was wondering if you could explain a little bit about yourself, what you do for partners and addicts alike, and then we'll start talking about the lie detector exam.
Sure. And Carol, you know, I wanted to start off by telling you I love, love, love your workbook, Helper Heal. It has been so helpful to my clients. And one of the things I love about your book is that you're doing one of the things that the polygraph exam will do is there's multiple different tangible ways for the person struggling with the addiction to earn the trust back of the betrayed partner. And so your book gives so many great tools on tangibly how to do that. From my opinion, that's the importance of the lie detector exam, or if you want to call it a polygraph, and I'll explain the difference in those terms. But, you know, when we're doing the sex addiction treatment and betrayal trauma, we have to use a holistic approach. So when an addict is trying to earn trust back, we must have some tangible ways to do so, or the traumatized partner just does not have any way to see consistent progress in order to feel safe. You know, our work as therapists, we're working with the person struggling with addiction, we're working with the person who's traumatized, and we're really working to help them move from a place of woundedness to a place of healing so that they can go on and have a strong, healthy marriage. And of course, we know that foundation of marriage is honesty, accountability, and faithfulness. And so in my experience, the partner can't really begin the healing process until she's given the truth. She just doesn't even know what she's dealing with yet. And then the addict really can't begin recovery until they're able to tell the whole truth. I think even the person with addiction, you know, I see it every day, just for them to sit and look their wife in the eye and tell the whole truth, it's so scary. It takes so much courage because, of course, their biggest fear is when I tell her the truth, she's going to leave me. Mm-hmm. Of course, the wife is horrified to find out what the truth is. But I've mm-hmm. always had my partners tell me, I'm so glad. And of course, you know, as therapists, we prepare the partners for new information, that they're going to hear things they don't already know. But they're always glad to get that information. But what we're talking about today is, okay, you've probably lied and been deceitful and not had accountability for years, right? The addict living in active addiction. So the wife doesn't believe anything you say, right? So now you're telling me everything, but I don't really know if you're telling me the truth. So what we do, and again, I love your book because it has several things in it that help with this as well. We want to look for multiple tangible ways that we can show progress, that we can earn trust back, that that can help the partner to feel safe, that they can chart progress, that they see a difference in their spouse as they're in recovery. And we also want to help the person in recovery. You know, I have never had a person struggling with addiction that didn't struggle with honesty and accountability and intimacy, right? Those are all part of it. So they have to really learn how to tell the truth. So we use the lie detector test to help both of them. An exam, it used to be called a polygraph. So a polygraph is a machine that's designed to detect changes in the physiological characteristics, like your pulse, your breathing rate, your skin conductivity. You know, when you look up research, you can find anywhere from 70 to a little bit over 90% accuracy with the polygraph. It was the best we had at one time. But there's a lot of ways that you can beat a polygraph. So you can Google, I mean, there's YouTube videos on countermeasures for a polygraph. So we want to make sure if you're going to use a polygraph that whoever the examiner is, that they really are an expert in that field, that they're going to be able to go over, you know, the logistics of what it is with you. The latest one that we have is called the CVSA. It's a computer voice stress analyzer. I'm sorry, listen to me. Analyzer, I couldn't say that word for a minute. And what that is it's actually 98% accurate. There's no known countermeasures. So like if you Google and try to beat that, because it's computerized and it goes by the inflection in your voice. And so those are the main two lie detector exams, a polygraph or a CVSA. I use the CVSA. Carol, what do you use? Do you use the traditional polygraph or do you use the CVSA?
No, I use the traditional polygraph. So this is all great information for me. Yes, I would love to make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. So continue.
Yeah, you might want to just ask your polygrapher if he's familiar with the CVSA. My examiner has just given me a lot of good information and research on that. So what I do is I try to educate my clients. All therapists, and I'm sure you do this as well, we have to educate our clients on the exam. So whoever you're seeing, feel free to ask your therapist questions about the exam. They'll educate you on it. They're going to have, like, I know I have a disclosure authorization that you as a client are going to sign, and then I have a separate contract with my examiner. I only use one examiner, and I have a separate contract with him to also protect my client's privacy. So just in knowing that if you are going to take a polygraph or a computer voice stress analyzer, the CVSA is what we call it. If you're going to take either one of those, go ahead and ask your therapist questions. You want to feel safe when you're taking it. And most likely your therapist has taken those steps because we want to protect you. We want you to feel safe.
That totally makes sense. And so I will definitely ask him about the CVSA. Now, I know we can't talk price over a podcast, but do you find that the CVSA is more expensive than the lie detector test or polygraph?
Yes, it is. Now, some lie detector tests, though, I think are right in about the same range, but you're going to pay several hundred dollars, and that will be paid to the examiner. So it is an extra expense.
Okay.
And of course,
just
you know,
Okay, so now, why do you think that, why don't all sex addiction therapists use a lie detector exam?
Well, this is interesting because I was just talking to another therapist. We just had a discussion. We were in a group chat, and we had a discussion about this. And what I learned from it is we all have to remember that mental, emotional, and relational therapy has really made significant developments through research and even societal acceptance over the past 30 years or so. So previously, therapists really looked at the traumatized partner as kind of a controlling codependent. And they didn't, you know, understand that they need truth and accountability in the healing process. I've actually heard therapists, and this was just recently, tell me that the reason they don't use a lie detector test is because it feeds the control of the partner, or it isn't fair to the addict because it's shaming. Another reason they use is because it can't be guaranteed 100%, and that is true. And then, of course, there can be issues if the client fails the exam. And so, you know, maybe they're not prepared into how to deal with that. So there's several reasons that a therapist might not use it. And, you know, just like you were saying earlier about disclosure, you know, some partners are not going to want disclosure. Of course, we encourage them to have it because I don't think you can have intimacy in a marriage without honesty. But sometimes they don't want it. We're always trying to honor what you want. So you don't have to have a lie detector test if you don't want one. If you work with a therapist and they don't use one, you know, it doesn't mean that you're not still going to have an honest disclosure or that you're still not going to have great treatment with that. But I think the lie detector exam is just a really extra tool and multiple tools to try to help the therapeutic process be structured and have tangible ways to earn trust.
Well, I do too, and you mentioned trust, so that obviously is the number one benefit. It establishes trust because it establishes honesty. Can you tell us some more benefits that you believe that the addict and partner receive from doing this exam?
Yes, I think a lie detector test benefits the addict in his journey of accountability and truth-telling. In my experience, when somebody comes in for addiction treatment, I see that one of the most difficult challenges somebody in addiction has is accountability. Because they've been used to doing what they want, keeping secrets, saying what they want, they've not lived a life of accountability. And so having a lie detector test, it really helps the person with the addiction because it's one more step of accountability. They know they're going to have to pass an exam. They know they're going to have to sit and look at their wife. And, you know, when they really get into treatment, Carol, you know this as well, they want to be accountable. They want to tell the truth, but they're scared to death. They haven't done it. And there's consequences for some of the information they're giving. So I think it's very helpful for accountability. Of course, there's been staggered disclosure, partial truth for the partner a lot of times. And so what I have seen is that the lie detector exam really gives them a peace of mind. It's like, okay, he's told me everything now, and he's passed the lie detector test. And I always tell the partner, here's the first drop in the bucket of earning your trust back. He's told you everything. He's passed the exam. Is anything 100%? No. Could he be, you know, could he go out of our way and fool all of us? Sure. But most likely he's not. We can usually trust with the evidence we have in front of us right now that he's made the effort, took the courage to tell you the whole truth. He was willing to take the exam. He's passed it. And I really find that it helps the partners to have a peace of mind, kind of validates the truth, so to speak.
Got it. And you and I both know that although there are people that can get past this, I mean, this is not 100% foolproof, definitely this isn't just used for after a disclosure. It can be used throughout the year. And the chances that he could pass every single time would absolutely would be nil. I mean, do you use a polygraph for a client's recovery in year 1, 2, and 3?
I do. So I use it right after disclosure. So my examiner comes to my office, and I have an office suite, so I have several therapy rooms in there, and we will do disclosure. And then after disclosure, I sit with the partner. I have the addict go out and sit in my waiting room. I sit with the partner. We go over the questions. Then my examiner does the exam in another therapy room. And then we go over the results right after. So I do it after disclosure. And then I do it in 3 months, 6 months. So that first year, there's 3 polygraphs, right after disclosure, 3 months, and 6 months. You know, we have those 3 stages of trust, right? It takes time. You can't earn trust back right away, no matter what you do. But when we do the second polygraph, we take it from disclosure till now. So there would be that 3-month period. And then again in 6 months. Now, I have several of my clients, they will come back and do one annually. Some of them will do one every 6 months for a while. It just makes them feel safer. You know, I have clients that, you know, their husbands have been unfaithful to them for many, many, many years. They've been lying and doing things. And so to think that they're going to feel completely safe sometimes in a year is unrealistic. But just the willingness of the person in addiction recovery, just him having an attitude that says, look, I'm scared to take a polygraph. I'm worried I won't pass it, or I'll say the wrong thing, or, you know, that it'll cause us more problems. But I'm willing to do whatever it takes to prove to you that I am telling the truth, that I am not acting out. When he's got that attitude and then she gets those exams periodically, it does a lot to really strengthen that trust, gives that peace of mind. Now, some therapists will use it before disclosure. I know several therapists that they will have the exam done between them and the addict. And so they'll ask the questions. They will get the exam completed before they even do disclosure with the partner. I don't recommend that because I want the partner to feel powered that once that disclosure is done, I find that a lot of times they will have questions about the disclosure, right, the new information that they got, or they think of something else the night before. So I just like to give the partners the power to ask those questions. I do think it's beneficial. I know several therapists that prefer to do it before disclosure, but I think it's more beneficial to the partner to do right after.
Well, I do too, and I've never understood that philosophy. I guess because I could see somebody saying, oh, yes, and I absolutely have every intention to be honest. That's before the disclosure. And then because they've taken the polygraph or lie detector test, or now the CDSA, then they change their mind. So I have some therapists that do too surrounding the disclosure. The first one, which is, as you have prepared this, were you 100% honest with your information, just showing intent, and then doing the 3, 5, 8 question polygraph information or questions for her after the disclosure. That can be helpful too.
Well, you're exactly right. And what I have found several times is they will go into the exam room to take the exam, and then my examiner will come out and get me, and he'll say, we have new information. And so then what I do is I will bring the addict back into the room, and I'll have him look at his wife and tell her the new information. Then he'll go back in and take the polygraph. So there's so many things that happen that day. You're exactly right. That day of disclosure, when he's sitting there looking his wife in the eye, telling her the truth. And what I do is I don't give the partners a copy of the disclosure. I don't keep a copy of the disclosure in my files. I want to protect the person with the addiction in that way, but I do allow my partners to ask questions through the disclosure. I allow them to take notes. And so I want them to feel empowered and be able to have the information that they need. At the same time, I want to protect the addict. But it's very powerful, as you know, Carol, when he's sitting there looking at her and they're really being raw, gut honest. And then he goes in to take the exam, and then I have a great examiner that I use, and oftentimes, you know, because he's going to tell the person taking the exam too, he's going to be like, look, you don't want to fail this exam. Now is the time to tell the truth. And a lot of times they're nervous or something else comes to their mind. And so, yeah, I totally agree with you. I think doing it afterwards is much more, it's just more efficient, I think.
Well, absolutely. I love the idea of the examiner coming to your office and having his own space. And that's much better for, again, the partner situation. I mean, I've had that happen too, but not where they were all with me. Of course, I have them be examined the day after the disclosure, because I do my disclosures on the weekends and the examiner is not available. And so he will let her come in and say, you know, he failed question number two. Is there another question that you would like to ask about that? And they huddle together and talk about why did he fail question number two. And usually it is because something came to mind as he was sitting there. I mean, I tend to give the addict the benefit of the doubt in that, you know, they are in a lot of denial for a lot of years. They don't even want to know what they've done because they would feel worse about themselves. And so when they're in front of the examination, things may come out. Things may creep up from the unconscious or the subconscious. And that's what this thing is all about. It's about getting the whole truth. We'd love it to be in our office for that disclosure, but on occasion it can come out when he's sitting right there being examined.
Oh, you're exactly right. And I do have occasions in my Tampa office that I have some clients go and take the exam the next day, and then we schedule a session to go over the results together afterwards. But you're exactly right. I've had clients before that they're holding on to that one thing that is so humiliating and so shameful that they just don't want to speak it. And every once in a while, once they get in that exam room and they know they have to say it, you know, they'll get it out. And then, like you said, we process it. And if they fail the exam, we take a look at the specific questions and we process it. And we have that opportunity so that by the time both the addict and the partner leave the office, we feel like we've done a comprehensive, complete disclosure, and we leave feeling like we have truth.
Well, and you know, you have a very specialized system for doing this. And so I was wondering if we could break for a minute and you could tell our listening audience about your 3-day intensive, because oftentimes that's where people are working through this process. Tell them a little bit about that. You mentioned having two offices, and let them know what the 3-day intensive is all about.
Yes, I have a 3-day intensive for couples in sex addiction recovery. I was trained under Dr. Milton Magnus in Texas under his 3-day process. And what happens in those 3 days is we do a full disclosure followed by an exam. We do an impact statement. We do an emotional restitution letter. We make sure by the time you leave, you have a very solid recovery plan in place. And we cover all of that in the 3 days. It's very intense. But I found it to be very effective. A lot of my couples that are even local will take the intensive and then continue therapy with me. But I do have people that come from all over the United States, and I've had several from Canada. that come to take those three-day intensives. So if you come from out of state to take them, it really sets you up for that beginning. And also, I really give specific guidelines of what recovery should look like. And I'm Carol, I'm sure you see this as well. I have so many couples that will come to me, and they have been trying to do recovery for a long time, but they'll do 12 steps and they don't have therapy, or they've done some therapy, but they haven't worked the 12 steps. They don't have a written recovery plan. There's no accountability in place. They're not doing a structured process. So although they've tried to do it, because they haven't had someone lead them with structure, there's so many questions. The wife is just so traumatized. And so I found really in my practice that that structure, it just gives peace to everybody. Like, okay, we understand what's happening. We're getting educated. There's structure to it. Here's the next step. And so I also give some structure so that when they leave my office to go home back to their therapist or getting the therapist, they already have a plan to know what to look for. This is what it should look for. Plus, the partner is going to know exactly what her husband's plan is going to look like. And, of course, if it's vice versa, where the wife may be the person struggling with addiction. But they have a solid plan. There's no secrets. Here's what it looks like. Here's what to expect. And I laid that out for them too. So that all happens within those 3 days. Of course, there's prep work to do before you come for those 3 days. But that's what we do. I found it to be very helpful.
Well, and if people wanted to find out more about the way you do these 3-day intensives and utilize your services, how could they get a hold of you?
You can just go to my website. It's just my name, crystalhollenbeck.com. And, of course, on there you'll see my phone number. You can text me or you can email me. My email is simply my name again to make it super easy. I like things simple. It's just crystal@crystalhollenbeck.com. And you can call me, text me, email me. What we would do is you would go to my website and you would fill out the 3-day intensive application, and then we would set up a phone call where I will speak to both of you, and we'll make sure you're a good candidate for the intensive. Sometimes people are not. It's not a good fit for them, maybe where they're at in recovery or what they're willing to do or not willing to do. And so we make sure that you're a good fit. And then there's a lot of paperwork that you would fill out. I do some mental health exams. You know, there's several things that we talk about to make sure that you're going to be a good fit. And then once that phone call takes place, we schedule the intensive and then we get busy.
Well, and you know, one of the things that I know is that people oftentimes in the first 6 months of recovery get very confused. And so let's say he's been slipping and sliding on his recovery. He may not be ready for a disclosure, even though she's ready for that information. So how do you handle that one when he doesn't have good recovery and yet she's chomping at the bit to get to the answers?
Well, Carol, I'm very directive, so we need to address that immediately. He has to get good recovery. So I don't see clients that aren't ready to do the work. So if somebody isn't sure, I don't know, they're going to do this little bit but not that little bit, they're just not ready to do recovery. And that's okay. Or, but I'm not the therapist to work for you. You really have to be ready to do the work if you're going to do my intensives or you're going to work with me, because, again, I want you to be successful. So we have a structured process in place. If you're just going to do half recovery or a little bit of this or a little bit of that, from my perspective, I think that only hurts you more, and I think it continues to traumatize your wife. I don't think progress is made.
And so if you're not working with this couple other than to provide them a 3-day intensive, you may send them back to their therapist and say he's got to work a harder program before we can expect him to really be authentic, honest, and transparent for this process. Right?
Well, I would assess that first. I would assess whether you were ready to do the work or not first. I've never had anybody come to the intensive that wasn't willing to do the work. There's work to do before you come to the intensive. I'm going to talk with you. We have about a 30-minute phone call, and I'm very direct. And I will assess if I don't feel like you're really ready to do it, then we won't do it. But I always try to help them find credentialed therapists or coaches in their area. So I always want them to get help. But I might say, you know, you're not ready for my intensive, but why don't you continue to work with a therapist there? And I will help them to find qualified therapists in their area that can be a help to them.
Got it. So I was just going to ask you, is there ever a time you do not recommend using the exam?
Yes. So usually the rule of thumb in my practice is if I have a couple that are getting divorced, then I don't do a disclosure. If there is abuse going on, I will not do a disclosure until there's absolute safety and in recovery, where I feel that the partner's safe and the addict has had some time to really stabilize himself as well. And then if there's a lot of suspicion, and if the partner doesn't want to do one. So if the partner says, I don't want to do one, then they're not going to be a good fit for my treatment plan, because I do believe that if we're going to work toward the marriage being healthy, there has to be honesty. So that's okay if the partner doesn't want one. So I wouldn't recommend forcing them. I think you did a great job talking about that earlier, Carol. You know, sometimes they don't want one for whatever reason, or they're just not ready to have one. But those would be the times that I wouldn't recommend it. You have to use, I believe, in doing it as soon as possible in the recovery process. I think it should be done at the beginning of therapy. But yes, those would be times that I wouldn't recommend it. We certainly don't want it to be harmful. And the suspicion part of it is if you're picking up that you're the addict isn't really being honest, is kind of resistant, isn't really buying into it, that would be a time I would not just do disclosure either. You know, because that doesn't benefit either one of them. But, you know, if the therapist will help. Oh, I'm sorry. The therapist will help both the addict and the partner. You know, your therapist should be open with you and say, here's where I have concerns. You know, here's what I'm recommending. How do you feel about this? You know, what are you feeling? So they would work with you, but those would be times that I would not recommend it.
That makes total sense. Well, I think you've been really helpful in making this process clear for those people that maybe even have heard horror stories about disclosures, because if somebody doesn't know, for instance, Crystal, I worked with a woman and she had had two botched disclosures, and the second one was offered by a therapist who said she knew how to do disclosures, and she did not have him prep beforehand. She did not have her write out questions. She just said to the addict, you just go ahead and write your timeline. And then she booked them for this partner's lunch hour. And so the partner was shell-shocked and didn't feel like she had nearly the information, and at one point said, can we get a polygraph examiner on this? And the therapist said, well, I wasn't going to, but yes, I can get that set up. And when she said that, the addict goes, well, wait, I have more to add. And so for this poor partner, she had been through the ringer. She had therapist betrayal, and she had had sex addict betrayal, and she had to go back to work. It was just unconscionable what she went through.
Oh, my heart is just sunk right now just hearing that. How awful for that couple, for both of them. You know, I just met with a couple yesterday, Carol, and they told me they were working with a therapist that actually told him to write out what he did and then tell her when he goes home. So they did a disclosure at home with no support. And, of course, it wasn't you know, it wasn't a full disclosure. It was staggered. That is why I think what you're doing with your shows is so important, which is why I always want to be able to help and be a part of this and support what you're doing, because getting these couples educated is so important. They're trying to do their best. They're looking for therapists. They're looking for help. They're desperate. And so I love recommending your shows because they're going to hear from so many therapists on so many topics. They're going to get educated, and it can really prepare the clients to make sure that they can go to their therapist and ask questions and be educated themselves. And hopefully that can prevent some of these things from happening where they're just harmed. In my opinion, they're just harmed more.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, I so thank you for doing this, because the other thing I know is that you had training by Dr. Milt Magnus, and that training wasn't cheap. And, you know, I always tease people, you know, with my, so, and you can relate to this because you are a CSAT also, for our sex addiction treatment, I mean, that's 10,000 hours and $10,000 worth of training to be able to know how to do this properly. And you went to Dr. Milt, and you learned how to do an intensive in a very structured way that makes the partner feel safe. And I'm sure you put a little spin on it yourself, because that's who you are. However, what I know to be true is that for a lot of couples, getting away, spending 3 days doing the prep work prior to, is just the number one way that they can seek safety in an unsafe situation.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, it's so powerful, because I also do trauma intensives, anger management intensives, and then I do intensives for the couple that is just to build a strong marriage after they're already in recovery. And all of those intensives are 3 days out of your life. Like, I require you to stay in a hotel, even if you live local. No TV, no social media, no work. You can check in with your kids once a day very quickly. But you're so right. You take those 3 days out of your life to really focus on yourself, on the healing. And we never get to do that, right? You go to therapy for an hour, and then you've got to get back to your normal life. And so it really has a lot of healing power, I think. I totally agree with you. And it's intense. You know, I always remind my couples, it's, you know, it's called an intensive for a reason. It is very intense. But you also have a notebook that you leave with. You get to take notes during. I make sure that, you know, I explain whatever questions that you have so you can comprehend a lot of the information, and you'll be processing it when you leave as well. But I agree with you. It's just a great time to focus on the beginning of healing and getting the structure down for what's ahead.
Now, do you have them come back at all later in the year?
It depends. Some clients do come back and see me for one-day intensives, and other clients will do some video sessions with me, and then some clients just continue with their own therapist. So I let that be individualized by the specific couple. Some people don't have to come back and see me. They're in good hands when they leave me. But other couples, they connect with me, and so I'll do some video sessions with them as well. I am a certified telemental health therapist, so once I've met with you in person, I will do some video sessions with you if that's helpful to you. And so it depends on the individual couple.
Totally makes sense. And I just saw for my own insurance that United Healthcare is now providing telehealth across the world. And telehealth is going to be a service that's going to be offered worldwide, given another 5 to 10 years. So I'm so happy that you can be there for our clients and work with them, and they don't have to travel 4 states to get to see you. So again, Dr. Crystal Hollenbeck, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. And, you know, you've just got such a well-put-together program. And I hope that people, if they have questions, will go to your website, www.crystal, Holleneck back, and that's HollenBeck.com. Thanks, Crystal.
Thank you, Carol. So good to talk with you.
Oh, you too. Make it a good one.
Okay, bye-bye.
She really is an expert in the field on so many things. She is a CSAT. She's an APSAT. She is a certified sexual therapist, and she's been certified by ASECT. And she really works hard at providing good trauma skills to sex addicts and partners alike. She has been certified and has a degree in clinical trauma. So she's somebody who can really take a holistic approach to this, and I think you could hear from her that she cares about the couple and wants the best for them. And that's what we do at APSAT. Remember, she's an APSAT clinician, a PhD. And so, once again, thanks for listening to this show. If you have any questions, you can always email me at carol@carolthecoach.com. You can get a hold of her through her website. There are just lots of resources out there, so don't cheat yourself. All right? Get those resources. And then I'm going to say just the opposite. If you've been in recovery 2 or 3 years, you might want to take a break on the resources because you might want to live more of a normal life that's liberated from the trauma you've been through. So think about that and how you can restore yourself a little bit at a time. Hey, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, and I just so appreciate being with you today. And as I say all the time, I say, you know, there will only be one of you at all times. Fearlessly have the courage to be yourself.
For more information, have a good week. APSATS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.